for president.
With demands on the Democratic
introducer to a very exuberant
nominees like the
crowd.
So who is Cynthia McKinney? Well,
didn't in 04 or 00.
Cynthia McKinney authored legislation to eliminate subsidies for
or 96 or 92
corporations which are exporting
but they're still
jobs to so-called third world
progressive. They just don't have a sense
old countries, the global south
of urgency, and they're
Cynthia McKinney has
more tactical
authored legislation to create real living wage jobs in the United States
and less
Cynthia McKinney authored legislation
forthright in supporting
to repeal the military tribunal
the candidates they really believe in
that. Cynthia McKinney authored legislation to
even if these candidates are
protect the national forest and to restore those ecosystems.
Not part of the major party duopoly.
What?
Cynthia McKinney has authored legislation to
not a Nader McKinney or McKinney
completely eliminate depleted uranium weapons in this country.
Nader ticket this year.
And it sounds like we have a bad double stream. But I also have to remember to turn down my own radio, and that's something you should do too if you call in. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, or if you're listening to us on the stream, as one of the considerate listeners, just let us know. Thank you, North Carolina. We are having, apparently we're having some technical problems with the Winamp. I'm not quite sure what they were, but I just turned it off because it's time for Bathrop Spears Broadsides coming up, so stay tuned. We have special guests Nancy McCready and Bob Hansen, homeless activists from Santa Barbara, calling in. We may have a San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness advocate calling in, talking about homeless courts in San Francisco. Peter Marin, poet and on-the-scene observer in Santa Barbara, will also be calling in later. And finally, at 6:30, we're going to have an activist from Menlo Park / Palo Alto calling in about her struggles to avoid getting cited in her car for sleeping. That's Linda. She'll be calling in, too. So a lot of callers calling in. You can call in, too, if between all these calls, hopefully, and we'll try and deal with them all. Stay tuned.
Shit, man, there's a hobo in my yard!
Yeah, there's a hobo, I'm gonna get a whoop ass on him now!
Go on, get him! six-pack up on his ass. I allow the hobos in my yard, you know that? This train is bound for glory, man. And ain't no room and glory for no freeload of hobos. No, sir.
That was two numbers, Mayor's Lawn by Just Kiddin' and The Hobo Train by Rube Waddell. Or is it Waddell? It's probably Waddell. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. The name of the show is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. And we're going to be on for 2 hours, as I mentioned, interviews coming up with Linda from Menlo Park / Palo Alto. Or is it Redwood City? It's up there over the hill. All these suburbs get all confused in my mind. Then later on, we're going to be having a couple from Santa Barbara, old-time homeless activists who live in their vehicle. Nancy McCready, Neff Said Nancy, as I call her, and Beaming Bob Hansen, or Protest Bob, as he's known in Santa Barbara. After that, another quick update from Peter Marin, who you heard on the air about a week and a half ago, Sunday before last, giving a rather long and informative discussion of what's cooking down in Santa Barbara. So we got lots of stuff on the pot, or in the pot, and on the stove. I was kind of hoping to, and I always pull this stuff together at the last minute, talk about homeless courts, because I got wind of a homeless court being put together or actually happening in Santa Cruz. That's not a court run by homeless people trying the rich and the guilty for their crimes, which might be an excellent plan. No, no. Rather, unfortunately, it's the... Well, I actually wrote a little something about it. How did I describe it? On IndieBay.org. That's a website I recommend you check out if you haven't already. Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you Google for Santa Cruz Indie Media, you'll get to SantaCruzIndieBay.org/Santa Cruz, which is the long, hard way around to get to it. They're a website that I have problems with, but also am grateful it is around. I posted a story called Homeless Courts Rules for Fools. Apparently the last Tuesday of every month there is a so-called Project Clean Slate, which allows 10, count them, 10 lucky defendants to go to a so-called court, that is some judicial clown overly paid $100,000 or more a year, sits down with his black or her black robes, mostly his black robes, and with select referred people, you get some special treatment. You get sent to a program. So instead of having to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars or have your credit rating ruined for all those sleeping band tickets or the tickets you got for sitting next to a building on Pacific Avenue or for peacefully spare changing or sitting in the shade, such as Officer Forbes and Officer – it was actually Officer Forbes alone – gave to six people near the Tampico's a couple of weeks ago. Instead of having all that on your record, you can work it off by going to a program, you see, because it's all your fault, not the crazy fault of the city that put in these ordinances that criminalize people for looking poor in public places, not engaging in any criminal behavior, but just looking bad. Police selectively enforce these laws. Have a rich person walk a dog on the mall, get told, you know, you're not supposed to have your dog, or ignored. If you're a poor person with your dog, kiss your ass goodbye and say hello to a $100 to $200 ticket for having a dog on Pacific Avenue. This is not uniformly true, but it's true enough for the time that it makes it clearly class legislation selectively enforced as a useful tool for the police department. It can become extremely abusive if individuals try to assert their rights, as, for example, Donna Dice did on May 9th of this year when she was out on Lighthouse Avenue, I don't know, out there in the 3-tree parking lot A near Lighthouse Field. It's actually Westcliff Drive. And she was approached by a man in black or in a dark outfit, who turned out to be Sergeant Christian Lamas. She didn't want to talk to him, walked away, driven up in a black unmarked car, according to her and other witnesses. And she, you don't have to talk to the police unless you are specifically suspected of a crime. She walked to her van. He demanded she stop. She tried to get into her van with her cup of coffee in her hand. He spun her around, slammed her against the car next to her, slammed her down on the ground, broke her arm, handcuffed her arm behind her back, held her there for what she says was it 20 minutes to half an hour, and then charged her with resisting arrest. The other charge was assaulting an officer, a charge that disappeared 2 months later when the case got to court. He, Sergeant Lamas, claimed that Donna Dice threw coffee on him when he whirled her around. So the problem is, if you disrespect an officer's authority, even if it's illegitimate authority, you can get brutalized. You can get your arm broken. And that kind of abusive behavior by thugs in uniform, or let's say individuals in uniform, who should know better and who should be trained better, Sergeant Lamas, if you're listening, or your friends on the police department, it has to be somehow checked by the community. It has to be stopped. Because obviously your superiors aren't doing it, the city council isn't doing it, the district attorney isn't doing it, the grand jury isn't doing it, so it has to be the community that does it. Well, could this be a member of the community calling in? We'll see. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
Hey, we had a call in there earlier to check to see if we wanted some workers to talk on the radio station today, and we were just making sure if that was still the case.
Sure. What's the subject matter?
Update on the, you know, the AFSCME strike that's been going on.
Sure, how about that? Sounds fine to me. It's not my specialized subject, but it sounds like it could be yours. Are you a striker?
I'm actually, a supporter here, and I believe it Rebecca was the other supporter that was telling me that, you know, some individuals over there at the radio station were wondering if.
I did speak to Rebecca a couple of times, and I'm glad that she got you to call in. What's your name?
I'm Jonathan.
And Jonathan, what's the story? What kind of an update? I guess we're in day 3 or day 4 of the
day 4 of the strike. Yeah.
So what's been happening up at UCSC up there?
Well, it's been quite an event, to tell you the truth. You know, these 4 days have been consistent. Movement by the workers here. They've been consistently walking, showing signs, being really, you know, ready to do whatever it takes. Unfortunately, it seems like the UC administration, you know, hasn't really listened here for some reason. We're getting a lot of good support from the community. You know, people come by, they honk, they've dropped off food for us. They've even stayed over, taught classes at the base. But to tell you the truth, I really haven't seen the administration step up at all and show its support, like true support. They just seem to be saying that you guys are doing your thing, go ahead for it. But other than that, unfortunately, I would have to say they're not really stepping up as the way the university should step up, you know, world-renowned institution.
Jonathan, let me ask you, what are the issues involved? Why are the workers on strike, and how many workers are on strike?
Sure. Well, it's about 11 months now, maybe going on to 12 months, they've been in the negotiations for contract. You know, every 3 years they get an opportunity to basically bargain for a better contract to what they previously were given. You know, it seems pretty logical and fair to ask for. And what they're asking for at this point, you know, is really a basic needs. You know, they're asking to be lift out of poverty wages, you know, and especially so in comparison to other surrounding community college and surrounding hospitals like Kaiser. These individuals here that work here, our AFSCME members, are getting paid 26% less than these surrounding community colleges and hospitals, private hospitals. So, you know, one simple thing they're asking for is, you know, equal pay for equal work. That's you know, a really dignified, respectable, justifiable thing to ask for. That's, you know, step one. And the other thing, too, is, I know this is several workers that I'm very familiar with. You know, been working there for about 28 years. And, you know, there's a minimum and a maximum pay bracket. And I will tell you that these people that have been there for 28 years have still not gotten to their maximum bracket. So another thing they're asking for is these annual steps so that there's guaranteed raises, you know, help with the inflation and so on, so that they can actually start getting a little bit more availability with financial, you know, gains here, you know, get a little raise every year or something. So that's another thing they're asking for. And then, of course, you know, there's pension, health care, parking, all these at this point with the negotiations that they're going, the university can at any point unilaterally increase fees without any sort of negotiation. So another really big point of the bargaining unit right now is to ask for this benefit that they will negotiate before they just unilaterally increase these wages on the members. Because if you got to think about it, if they're going to have to pay more for their health care or for their pension or for their parking, it doesn't really matter what they're getting paid.
So what,
because
I'm looking,
they're just going to increase these other fees. So, you know, it's really, again, asking for dignity, asking for respectable wages, asking for just treatment.
What,
some things that equal pay, equal work. Very
Jonathan, let me interrupt you, Jonathan. I'm looking at the indiebay.org press release by. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
What we got here is 8,500 UFC California workers go out on strike. How many are locally out on strike?
Well, at UC Santa Cruz, we have 550 UC AFSCME members. You know, with the individuals that are out on furlough and the individuals that are on vacation, we have, I would say, roughly around 300 members that are still here. And I would have to say at that, we would probably have at least upwards of 90 to 95% of those members out supporting on the picket line.
Now, are the other workers at the university supporting this, or are they going to work business as usual?
You know, I would have to say that there's been a very, very heavy amount of intimidation by the management, intimidation by UCOP, which is University of California Office of the President, intimidation by the law firm Littler and Mendelson, as well as their PR firm, Preston and Hilter, I believe. And it's really been quite sad. You know, there have been a lot of support from faculty, staff, classes being canceled, different organizations, Q, UPD. We had Bill Monning, California Assembly members. You know, there is a lot of support. But at the same token, there's such high amounts of threats that are being come and intimidation from the university that it's quite difficult. I'd have to say that they're really hesitant to try to do anything, you know, in fear of retaliation. Although
a
big percentage are you know, supporting us. These students,
yeah.
I've been asking as much as possible to have classes pulled off class locations, you know, at the the Vets Hall, locations at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, at the Community Wellness Center, Pergolesi, different shops. I mean, there's been classes gone all over. I've been at professors' houses as well.
So, in other words, classes are being held off campus in support of the strike?
Exactly, exactly. There's, you know, before, previously, when school was in session with, I mean, you know, it's in session now, but in the spring, there was a huge amount of support, and we were pretty much at 100%. People were canceled classes. People were ready to be at the picket line. Now, at this point, there's only about 1,200 registered students enrolled right now. And of those 1,200, I would have to say a high percentage is in support, and it's canceled classes or moved them off-site. I believe, at the same token, to tell you truthfully, they've actually gotten letters from faculty, have gone and received letters saying that they will be reprimanded or punished or disciplined for canceling classes. So it's quite a difficult situation for these individuals. Lecturers, faculty, grad students, they're all not getting paid, you know, fair wages either. You know, when a UC president makes $940,000 a year, there's a problem with priorities here, not resources, but priorities.
So what are you asking the community to do to support the strike?
You know, of course, you know, any time we have a strike, we'd ask the people to honor our picket line, you know, and come to the picket line and show support. Because, of course, collectively, communally, we can harness so much energy and sympathy and support that it's much more powerful of a message. So, number one, you know, come down to the picket line, show your support. We have one day left, which is tomorrow, that, you know, it would be quite a scene to have members of the community that have not been here yet show up. We've already had different vendors come over. We've had construction crews come over.
Where, Jonathan, exactly is the picket line?
The picket line is at the entrances of campus, the main entrance being at Bay and High. There's also another west entrance that's off of Empire Grade a little further. And then there's also side entrances, one being the Arboretum, another entrance being right near 7-Eleven, which is, you know, guarded by a white gate and a chain. But we have individuals at all the main entrances that we can possibly have people there and visibly showing that they're asking you to honor the picket line and honor the strike.
And you're asking people not to come on campus at all.
Exactly. You know, the business shouldn't be functioning as usual when the service members, the members that make the campus run, that clean the rooms, make the food, drive the people to the shuttles, clean the grounds. You know, these are the individuals that really make the campus run. And having scabs and having, you know, temporary people that are hired from an agency that won't guarantee benefits, that won't give health care, that won't let union representation. This is really, unfortunately, the case that our UC system is allowing. You know, they prefer to hire temp agencies without representation. So,
you say that,
again, we ask that, you know, we get as much support and not let this happen
you
anymore.
You say there's one day left in the strike. Does that mean you're just going to quit after this, after tomorrow, or what?
Oh, of course not. Of course not. You know, pressure is coming from every direction we can possibly meander. The reason the strike was decided is because we wanted to keep the pressure going. you know, it's been impasse. I believe they've been in final impasse for about 2 or 3 months. So they've been in deadlock with the negotiations, and the fact that they were getting these injunctions filed against them for absolutely no reason really is upsetting. A lot of these workers, staff, faculty, are fed up and tired that they're not getting the right, the basic right to picket, stand up, and strike.
Let me ask you about that. I read that there was an injunction against the strike, but strikers are proceeding anyway. Have you had any consequences? Are the authorities trying to move on people? Have the police done anything?
No, we've actually, they've been fairly respectable about all of that. You know, this comes back to, earlier times back in the day when we would have judges in the pocketbooks of, of different different members of the community that would pay our judges, and they would say, we need to charge an injunction and make sure that these people can't go on strike and call it illegal, rather than really, honor the work that these workers do and honor the fact that they can legally strike. This is a legal right that we've been granted and fought for and fought really hard for. And the fact that they're trying to take that away again, it comes back to what's been going on ever since post 9/11. Really much, we've been losing our rights here as citizens in this country, and it's you can really feel the pressure.
How can people come up and, they can come to the picket line, and is it a 24-hour picket line, or does it close down?
We've been there from 6 in the morning, actually 5 in the morning. We begin sitting up 4:35 in the morning, and we're there till around 1 in the morning. So it's almost a 24-hour picket. Other than, coming to the picket line, I would start saying putting more pressure on the office of the president, UCOP. Start calling in the president, Mike Udoff. Start calling in the chancellors.
Have you got a phone number?
The universities.
Jonathan,
I do not have a phone number with me. I'm actually unable to grab any access to that.
Feel free to
call back in with some information.
Sure. Feel free to call. The next show, From the Cream to the Dregs, goes from 8 to 11, and I'm sure that Uncle Dennis there will be happy to pass on that information to the community.
I would really, really appreciate it. And we thank everybody over here so much, and over at Free Radio Santa Cruz. You guys do such an amazing job, and I really appreciate
now, Jonathan,
what you do
place,
for the community.
Is there a place people can go for updated information? And there's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media. Is there another website or blog or source of information you recommend?
For Santa Cruz, what's going on, I would say Indie Bay, Indie Media is the best site right now. We're trying to post daily what's been going on, giving videos of what's been happening, trying to give a different perspective. We've also been putting radio programs, on free radio. So we are doing as much as we can to get out to the public using alternative media. Because as we know, our corporate media really isn't as supportive as you would hope.
You sound a little hoarse there, Jonathan. How you doing?
Oh, unfortunately, I lost my voice yelling and shouting. I would have to say if I didn't lose my voice, I haven't been doing my job.
Now remember, get some, honey and some lemon and some hot tea.
Oh, it.
You gotta fortify yourself for tomorrow, right?
Yep, that's what keeps me up during the night. I do that during the nighttime.
Now, how can people, if they want to donate money or anything of that sort, is there a phone number they can call into? If you don't have it with you.
The best thing I would say is call the Ask Me Local, 3299. We can call the UCSC, Ask Me Local, and I actually don't have that memorized offhand, and I don't want to give the wrong number, but I can always just call it back, and that seems like the best thing to do for looking ways to support supporting locally over here at UC Santa Cruz. We can go with our local office number.
Sounds good.
I don't have right now, unfortunately.
Well, that's okay. Next time you or Rebecca or somebody else calls in with some info, try to have those numbers available, because that can be helpful for the
we definitely can call in back
couch
back
potatoes,
today. To tell you the truth, just to really give you a sense of how difficult of a struggle this is, workers have been picketing all day long, doing 8-hour shifts if they can, and going. Right now I'm at another worker's work site, her second job that she works. And so we're over here visiting her, making sure she's all right. She had a really long day. She put in a 10-hour day at the picket line. Now she's going to work another 6-hour day over here at her second job.
Wow.
Yeah, so, whatever can be done is showing some support, really understanding that the decision to go on a strike isn't a decision that they enjoy making. It's a decision that they have to make. It's a very difficult thing to do, and historically we can see the difficulties in going on strike, but it's always been for just, fair, dignified reasons and rationales. There's absolutely nothing unjustifiable about what these members here are working for.
I got
to
go, Jonathan. I appreciate your calling in. Call back with more info, and good luck with the strike.
Thank you so much. Appreciate everything you do over there. Be safe.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. And coming up next, hopefully, we're expecting a phone call from Linda Jolly. Linda's looking at the Redwood City Daily News of a year ago. Woman protests sleeping rule. Ordinance prohibits citizens from snoozing in their vehicles. A Redwood City woman ticketed by police for sleeping in her car has embarked on a mission to repeal the city ordinance under which she was cited. Linda Jolly says the ordinance threatens nappers citywide, despite police insistence that residents who catch a few Z's in their car have nothing to worry about. Jolly, who uses an aging pickup truck in her landscaping work, says she suffers from insomnia and needs to nap at least every 4 hours. As a result, Jolly says, she drives around town at night, running errands at stores that are open, stopping every so often to doze off. That sounds like it could be her now. She said her residence is in Redwood City, and she has a Menlo Park mailing address. Let's see who's calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, my name is Linda Jolly.
Hey, Linda, I'm just reading about you in the Redwood City Daily News.
Yeah, if you have any way to turn up your volume a little bit, it would be good.
Me or you?
Well, I'm not sure how to turn it up on this phone, but if you can. But I can hear you. I can hear you.
How about now? Now, hopefully you aren't trying to listen to me on the Internet.
No. The other machines are off.
Good. Okay. Well,
so
you saw the
story in the news.
I was just reading this year old story about how you say that you, according to the story, you drive around town at night running errands at stores that are open, stopping every so often to doze off because you had an insomnia problem.
Well, I have a very abnormal sleeping patterns and I can't change them, and I tend to like work all night off and on. And so I need a lot of little naps, and I continue napping, as a matter of fact. And you know what happened during one of those naps, right?
We actually didn't reach that point in the story. You want to tell us?
Okay, I was taking a nap during the night. I had only napped for 20 minutes when a Redwood City police officer came up to my landscape truck. And to my astonishment, she knocked on the door, and then, with very little ado, she tried to accuse me of living in the truck, which seemed pretty strange because it is a business truck, and it looks like a business truck in every way. So I was astonished, but it didn't take me, and she accused me of living in a truck, and she gave me a citation worth $200. And I was extremely upset, but it didn't take me too long to figure out what was actually happening, because I just happened to be a homeless advocate. I'm kind of like you. I'm a real troublemaker. And I, for several years, have run an information service in Redwood City for the homeless, so it didn't take me too long to figure out what was happening. What they were doing is that they were looking for homeless people to harass them, cite them, drive them out of town, drive them underground, and that kind of thing. It's a vicious attack on
people. How do you know this? Being the devil's or the police advocate, how do you know she wasn't simply, been told, well, you know, we've seen more accidents, or there have been more people inhabiting their vehicles, they're staking out houses, there are drug rings running around, there are child molesters snoozing in their landscaping cars. In other words, how do you know that they were specifically targeting the homeless? Do you have an inside source in the police department? I mean, what's your information?
It's not too hard to figure out from the things they say and from what homeless people report. It's pretty transparent. There are all kinds of clues. In fact, I got a lawyer and went to court. And in court, this police officer tried to claim that there were homeless people camping out in the area, and cleaning them up was a priority, and that I must be part of that crowd, even though I'm obviously a landscaper. And you know, just all kinds of little clues made it obvious.
Now, hang on, Linda. You say, though, that you've also run a homeless advocacy center for 2 years. Doesn't that put you slap dab in the middle of the sleeping conspiracy?
Yeah. Well, I don't actually have a center or anything, but it's a little information service. I have a lot of information on what some of the homeless people can, the services that are available to them locally. I have a list of information that I can transmit on the Internet if somebody is desperate. We do have free meals and a few things like that that will help the people.
Are there actually services where I understood that the shelter service was so pathetic in the Menlo Park, Redwood City area that, you know, it really wasn't worth speaking about?
The plot thickened after that, because I started gathering more information about what's actually going on and talking more directly to the homeless people themselves and checking. One thing I did was I phoned all the homeless shelters and people in the business of trying to help the homeless, and to my amazement, I found all the homeless shelters were full. You can't get in. And then I found that senior housing is full. I found that subsidized housing like Section 8 has been cut off. It's full. So the situation is there's no place for these desperate people to go when they get sick and lose their job or anything like that. The only thing they can do is sleep in their vehicle. And when they try to sleep in their vehicle, they are persecuted. They may be fined so heavily that they may lose the vehicle as a result of the government's fines. So what it is it's close to being an extermination system. Okay?
Yep.
You lose your job, you go homeless.
Right.
Then they try to take away your vehicle, they cite you, they give you no place to go. And eventually I started to think of this as being somewhat similar to the extermination of the Jews in Nazi Germany. I mean, I know that that's a rather extreme example.
But we like to think of it as the elimination of the gypsies in Romania.
Yeah, it is.
It's not that we have anything against the homeless. It's just we'd rather they weren't around anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. In fact, the mayor of Redwood City, Barbara Pierce, wrote me an email saying that we don't want people sleeping in their vehicles, because this is associated with bad behavior. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, they're lumping everybody together as a class. It's class discrimination. It's like saying, well, if you lost your job because you got sick and now you're homeless, we don't want you anymore because poverty is connected with crime, and so we'll run you out. It's actually the same thing that they used to do to blacks and Mexicans, lump everybody into a group and say that this group is connected with bad behaviors, so we don't want them to have any power, and we want them to get out of town if possible, and we're going to harass and persecute them in every possible way. We don't want these people. Now, the sad thing is, I think they're doing this all over the country. I have various reports. And so it is like kind of trying to purge the country of poor people or drive them from one place to another. So it gets worse and worse for them as they find out nobody wants them and they have no place to go. And I suspect that a lot of them eventually kind of like die in the bushes.
Now, yeah, I suspect you're right, too. There's a much higher death rate and lower age when homeless people die on average in city after city, Santa Cruz included. Have you had much luck in talking to other homeless people who've suffered this kind of either ticketing or move-along shit from the police? Have you had much communication?
I have. As a matter of fact, we talked about forming a class action suit composed of people that have been harassed by the police for the crime of sleeping or existing or sleeping in vehicles, specifically sleeping in vehicles. That's the worst thing. Here's the deal, Robert. This persecution is spilling over to where it can affect the average working person, even a homeowner. Now, here's the deal. If you are like 70 years old and you go to a 24-hour pharmacy to get some medication, and then you come out and you happen to pass out in your front seat from your ailments and fatigue and so forth, a cop can come along and give you a $200 citation, and it may cost you, you may have to hire a lawyer to fight this thing. It may cost you $1,000 worth of time and money to fight this little thing. It cost, I'm a landscaper, and it cost me around $1,000 worth of my time and money to fight this thing. So if a homeowner snoozes in his vehicle, he better have the deed to his house with him, or he's vulnerable.
Now, are you saying that if a police officer comes by somebody sleeping in their vehicle and then gets proof that they have a residence somewhere else, they specifically acknowledge they won't give that person a ticket?
Well, it's difficult to prove that you have a residence.
No, but I'm saying if they can, is that something that the police have stated that they have a policy on?
The police have not told me their policy on that, but I do know that when this cop knocked on my door, I immediately gave my residence address, but she didn't believe me because I have my P.O. box on my driver's license. I have it there for reasons of stability and security, secure mail, etc., because people do move around. So she didn't believe me. What she believed was that she saw a food cooler inside my truck, a food cooler and a P.O. box on my driver's license. And for those reasons, I was cited, and I was even convicted in court on the first go-around. They believe what they want to believe.
You know, I want to actually, and I appreciate your passion. I kind of feel a little guilty breaking it up, but I'm going to break it up anyway and ask you questions.
Sure.
I think it's I'm happy to hear that your indignation is a refreshing thing to hear. A lot of people in Santa Cruz feel the same way about the sleeping ban, as we call it here, which is our local ordinance, but many of us have gotten jaded or tired or burned out or what else is new? Here they come again, you know, that sort of thing.
We've heard over here that the situation is so bad in Santa Cruz that you can't even carry a blanket during the night. You could be cited for that.
Well, there is a blanket ban that specifically says after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning, if you attempt to set up bedding anywhere, that is a $97 crime. $20 crime with all the extra court costs adds up to $97 if you choose to just pay the bail and try to avoid any further activity. And I would have to say that those kinds of tickets are few and far between, let's be honest. But there are, on the other hand, 60 to 90 sleeping tickets a month given out by police department, parks and rec rangers, UC police together.
Has anybody ever asked them, where do they expect the homeless people to go?
Always. That's always the question. That's often the question of the homeless person. In fact, when we had we called a sleep-in and then training to resist this a year ago, and we may be doing this again, and you may be invited as a guest speaker, Linda, at City Hall, we're thinking of doing it in the second week in August, because it'd be on the anniversary of the so-called Homies for the Homeless Sleepout, where we slept out for a week at City Hall. I was there for one night, and I would come down thereafter and, you know, record and...
Well, good for you guys.
But, I mean, the issue... I guess the issue here is for you. Have you had any success in organizing people to come together? You say if you're looking for a class action lawsuit, but have you actually talked to anybody else who's gotten sleeping ban tickets and tried to help them fight their tickets in court?
To some minor extent, yeah. I know one guy who received so many tickets that he was going to lose his vehicle, which was the only place he had to go. Only place he had to turn to.
He was a criminal habitating his vehicle.
Yes.
Unlike you, an innocent landscaper caught up in this nasty web.
Well, we are all criminals. As a matter of fact, I kind of have plans to become more of a criminal. As a matter of fact, I kind of like being a criminal, Robert. Quite a few years ago, I was in jail. I understand you've been there, too. I was in jail over a protest, and I was actually thrown out of that jail. So I look forward to that kind
How humiliating, thrown out of jail. Shocking.
I look forward to that kind of thing, and I do continue to nap because that is my way of living. And if the Redwood City Police bother me again, I will sue their city.
Now, have you been ostentatiously sleeping since? Well, first of all, before I go into that, I want to know if you're continuing to sleep around, so to speak. Because I may have to come up there and join you. You never can tell.
But let's be sure that we practice chastity and all that.
Well, now, wait a minute. But I guess the issue I have for you is, can you give me a, it's not an issue, but can you give me a blow-by-blow description of how you lost at one level and then won your sleeping ticket, and also what the ordinance actually states in Redwood City that you fought?
Yeah, we have an ordinance. It's Muni Ordinance 20.227, and that's the ordinance they used to cite me, and it specifically forbids using a vehicle as sleeping or living quarters unless the vehicle is parked in a legal trailer or motor home park. Okay, so, but it's, this ordinance deserves to be scratched off the books because it's two people in law enforcement have told me the ordinance is impossible to fairly enforce. They cannot really tell if someone is living in a vehicle as a regular thing. They could not tell whether I was or wasn't. They have no way to verify really where you're living when you go to court. I was convicted based on having a cooler and having a P.O. box. And this is ridiculous. It's like they'll get you if they want to give you. And let me tell you this, the enforcement of their laws is done in a totally unconstitutional fashion. For instance, we all know around Redwood City that big commercial drivers, truckers, live in their vehicles, sleep in them, cook in them. They park at big parking lots. The cops don't bother them because they are commercial. But the cops are looking for homeless people. This clearly violates the 19th Amendment, which guarantees us equal protection of the law, but
you
they
mean
don't
the 14th that. Amendment. 14th Amendment.
Oh,
the 19th
okay.
Amendment, I 14th. Think, is the right to vote for women, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe it's prohibition. I'm not sure.
You're absolutely right, but it's totally unconstitutional.
Well, you know, I had the same experience back in 1988 when we began mobilizing against the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. We tried to show that there was selective enforcement, that truckers who parked and slept there were not harassed, whereas people in their vehicles were. But let me use the bigots argument, or let's say the police department's, quote, useful tool argument, which is that, you know, people who are in their vehicles often are, not all of them, some of the people are, good, decent American citizens or, legal residents or legal people, whether they're residents or not.
Yeah.
However, people who are engaged in criminal activity also are in their vehicles, and people in neighborhoods are afraid of their children being molested and harassed. They're also afraid of the kind of accoutrements, setting aside all the bullshit scare stories, because I think they're mostly bullshit about that kind of stuff. But it is true that if you live in your vehicle, you have to dispose of your waste. If you live in your vehicle, you generally park in one place for a relatively long period of time, days on end at different times. If you live in your vehicle, you have to go urinate and defecate somewhere.
Yeah.
You have to get rid of your sewage somewhere if you have some sort of self-contained toilet.
Yeah.
And the issues for people in the neighborhoods is we don't want people, and also if you're parking on the street in front of people's houses, they pay I don't know how many $100,000 either to own the house or a fancy rent to rent the house.
Uh-huh.
And they figure there you are parking for free, you know,
right,
outside. So, you know, why don't you bums fucking move along? What do you, now, what do you say to that?
Right, right. Well, some of us here have talked about that aspect of it. As a matter of fact, I myself, as a working person who has struggled to make it in the economy, I don't want to see riffraff engaging in Mardi Gras on the streets as a daily thing.
Actually, I think Mardi Gras might be a good idea, but that's another story.
I don't want to see the, and I'm well aware that historically speaking, if you allow people to have like free land and just squat on the land, that historically speaking, what they do is they squat there and they breed, and pretty soon you have a vast shanty town full of crime and disease and everything. And I know that the cities are trying to prevent that. Okay,
you know, so I don't agree that that actually happens, but that certainly can be the fear that people have.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I know that, you know, tent cities formed in Ontario, California, that, you know, were supported by the city. They were given tents, they were given restroom
uh-huh.
facilities. And though they got larger, there was no ever any showing of increased crime. There was no, and there hasn't been any showing of increased crime.
Right.
Unless you consider such things as violating the sleeping ban or violating.
Yeah.
You know,
well, birth control has changed a lot of things. Nowadays, most of the people who have problems that keep them from making money, like health problems and everything, most of them have the good sense not to have children while they're poor. And this has changed everything. It's improved everything. Okay, so you don't have to have, you know, shanty towns with people having 9 or 10 kids in them and living in poverty and all that. Anyway, we talked it over here in Redwood City, myself and a couple of other activists, and we figured out what should be done. It's like you said, you can have a legal tent city. And about 12 other cities throughout the country have done this. You can find it on the internet, a big campground or a big parking lot, and you can allow people, desperate people, to legally camp there. You can have showers. You can even have a little bit of electricity. You can have a cop roaming the grounds, and you can have like almost zero problems. And this has been done successfully in other cities. So we proposed this here in Redwood City. Two of us activists, we proposed it to the Redwood City City Council. Can you imagine?
And naturally,
what happened?
They leapt forward and said, "Oh yes, immediately. We'll love to do that." Right?
These people in the City Council here did not even know that their homeless shelters are full and overflowing and have been that way for a long time. They didn't even know that.
So naturally, what you're going to do is bring homeless people down to sleep in the city council chambers, right?
I would love to,
mm-hmm.
but I have the problem that I myself have to make a living, and so we're somewhat restrained in what we can do. But you know, maybe we could get you, some of you guys, to come over here with signs and sleeping bags, since you're well into this.
We'll do it. You'll come over there if you'll come over here. I mean, it is sort of a. It's sort of a trade-off, and it does involve, you know, risking arrest, and it involves, you know, a kind of a high-profile demonstration to essentially challenge the mythology that these cities have, that everything
yeah.
is okie-dokie if only the poor would obey all the rules, and there's no problem in that happening. We're talking with Linda Jolly of Redwood City, Menlo Park, Palo Alto. Where are you from anyway, Jolly?
I grew up in this general area. I was raised in Los Altos.
And you're a landscaper.
Yes, I'm also a freelance writer.
And you actually have written a lot about this issue online. Do you have a place where people can go to read about this?
Can I give my email address?
Of course.
LindaJolly9@Yahoo.
That's L-I-N-D-A.
Let me spell that. LindaJolly9@Yahoo.
Yahoo.com.
Yeah. And if they forget any part of my name, they can find me through Google. Just type in Linda Jolly, because, like I said, you know, this story did make page one in several papers here, and a lot of people got agitated. One problem we have is it's so hard for some homeless people to fight back because they have no time and money. In fact, we have a class of people in Redwood City that I call slaves. They, you know, it used to be in the heyday of black slavery, the slaves at least had a legal place where they could spend the night. They had beds, they had cooking utensils, a place to wash up. It was a legal home, at least. But now we have people who work all day at heavy manual labor, and at night they have to hide in the bushes. They eat a cold dinner out of a can. They're terrified of being rousted by the cops and forced to move again. These are working people. They are just that they are making such small amounts of money that they can't do any better than this.
Now, have local attorneys and the ACLU come rushing to your aid? Or?
I asked the Peninsula Community Foundation to give me a small grant to expand my information service, and their response was to ask me for $300 up front before they would even speak to me, so I hung up on them. I asked the ACLU to help me. I wrote my own legal brief for this thing, but I wanted the ACLU to help me in the problem of trying to overturn this stupid ordinance. And ACLU thought that this is not a big enough problem to warrant their stepping in. They didn't seem to be aware that what we are confronting right now is the possibility of millions of people being affected by this nationwide.
Now, it's ironic, isn't it, Linda, because the ACLU in Southern California actually picked up the brief that Carol Sobel of the National Lawyers Guild wrote in the Jones case,
uh-huh.
and actually supported a brief which, you know, ultimately resulted in a settlement overturning at least one L.A. ordinance that criminalizes sleeping, sitting, or lying on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And
the Jones case was a great victory, and I'd like to see more cases like that.
The point I'm making is that the ACLU in Southern California seems to be, strangely enough, more liberal than the ACLU in Santa Cruz, for that matter,
yeah.
or, you know, Redwood City. It's kind of peculiar, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but, you know, there are a lot of middle-class people, which would include lawyers, who just can't figure this thing out because the cities have done such a great job of hiding the problem in most cities. I mean, about all they have to do is harass their homeless person, and he, like, disappears or fades into
Well, you know, my suggestion, Linda, is that there's a lot of money being pumped into this bogus 10-year plan to end homelessness.
And, oh, yeah. That's
and therefore, you know, because there's that much money being pumped into it, poverty pimps everywhere are trying to whip out their, oh, we've got lots of homeless stats. And that gives you a chance to demonstrate to the ACLU skis, though I don't know if it's worth the trouble, but maybe to the community generally, that there are a lot of poor people around who don't have lodging, who do either sleep in their vehicles or often more frequently don't even have a vehicle to sleep in. Let's talk about those people. If you had much contact with people who sleep in doorways and tents and who squat, who are, you know, use the parks or other areas to try to sleep at night.
I personally know at least three or four slaves, like I've just described, who work hard all day and then have to sleep in the bushes at night and eat cold food and don't even have a mattress to sleep on. I know them personally. I know them well.
Now, have they ever gotten tickets?
They don't usually get cited because the cops know they don't have any money to pad the city's coffers. They're usually just required to move.
Are you suggesting that you were cited in part because they thought you had money, or was it because the bored police officer had nothing else to do, or you were being too uppity with her? What's your analysis?
It could have been any combination of those things. I think that cops tend to look for game without thinking about what the consequences are or the needs and values of the person or anything like that. My own life was ruined by police abuse in 1985.
Tell me about that.
The cops back then used my husband to collect drug information, and the drug lords found out that he was working with the cops, and they set him up to be accused of a crime. He was accused of a vicious crime of rape. It was not easy. It's easy to get a girl to cry rape. He was accused of rape, and then I personally went to the cops, and this was in Menlo Park, and I asked the officer Larry Shannon to step in and help my husband since he was responsible. And that man, Detective Larry Shannon, sat there and he said, I don't have to do anything, and I'm not going to do anything. And as a result, my husband went to prison for 4.5 years. It ruined our business and our marriage. So I got tuned into police abuse in a big way, and I'm still seeing police abuse. It's all over the place.
Now, there are then some who would say, oh, well, with your history of, let's say, bad experience with the police department, would you say that you are objective in your analysis here? Aren't you perhaps, you know, wielding an axe, having a grudge of sour grapes?
Robert, I am coldly objective because I was trained in journalism in college, and I practiced journalism for 2 years, wrote many objective news stories, and I'm cool as a cucumber. So it's not that kind of a thing. I do value the law enforcement system. It keeps a lot of things, it tends to suppress the more serious crime.
Protects the property of the rich and gets the poor arrested for sleeping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The whole problem can be summed up under the label predator state. Now, I didn't invent that label. It was invented by a famous guy named Galbraith. And what it is that government at all levels has turned on its own citizens to a considerable extent. Now, if you doubt that, just look at the spraying thing. They want to spray us with deadly chemicals to kill a caterpillar. Well, I'm a landscaper, and I look under every leaf all over this area. And let me tell you this. There is no caterpillar. None. Okay? Never saw one.
Are you talking about the light brown apple moth, perhaps?
Yeah. There is no caterpillar. It was an invention to make money for somebody. Okay? There are people out there at all levels that want money, and they've figured out how to use government to make money.
I'm pretty sure that there are... I mean, I don't know anything about the issue, and I've never investigated light brown apple moth, but I have heard from even those who oppose the spraying that the light brown apple moth exists, but that spraying, A, is not necessarily helpful in getting rid of it, B, has consequences that are unknown and possibly, probably, in fact, demonstrably, at least for some people, untoward, and also that there are better ways of dealing with the whole situation, and that finally that there's no emergency involved. But before we get into that issue, which we don't need to...
I just wanted to use that as an example of predatory government, which is predatory government is our fundamental problem. I believe predatory government caused the war, caused the thousands of deaths in Iraq. And
that's hundreds of thousands, if not more than a million, actually.
Yes, and I believe the problem is that the American people have let go of their government, allowed it to do what it wants, and that it's suiting the interests of commercial outfits that want to get money.
So what are you doing to make sure that the government stops its murder regime in Iraq and its harassment of the poor in Redwood City?
I do my little part on the Internet and talking to people as best I can, but, you know, we're talking about both the war and the treatment of poor people are enormous problems that's going to take.
Now, what about homeless vets? Any experience with them over in your neck of the woods?
Yes, we have some housing for those guys. Those guys are lucky. There are an awful lot of them. It appears that the experience of war just ruins people to such an extent that it's very hard for them to get a normal life, and huge percentage of them wind up homeless. Before I forget, there is one thing that I would like to tell all of our listeners about how to protect themselves, okay? We're facing possibly a huge recession. The stock market is telling us that the economy may get really, really bad. I wouldn't be surprised to see the unemployment rate get up to 10% as it has sometimes in the past. Okay, a lot of people who were making it before were able to pay their rent won't be able to pay their rent because of the increasing price of gas and food and everything. So we're going to see possibly a massive escalation of the homeless problem. There's one thing that people can do on the individual level to protect themselves and their families. That is, if they have a little bit of money that is discretionary, they can put the money into a vehicle that they can live in. But they have to be aware that the predator is out there at all times. If they try to live in a vehicle that is seen as a living vehicle, like an RV or a trailer or a motorhome, they will be caught and cited, okay? Because almost cities make it illegal. Okay, so what they need to do is get a vehicle that's not recognizable as a living vehicle. Get it like a small commercial truck with no windows, something like that. Keep in mind it's a war. The predator is out there looking for game. It's a war. It's you against the system. So anyway, I advise everybody to get a vehicle like that if they have any extra money, because they don't know what's going to happen.
We've been talking with Linda Jolly, who is talking to us from Redwood City. Is that where you are now?
Yeah.
And again, if you want to reach her, you can reach her at Linda Jolly, Jolley, 9, number 9, at yahoo.com. Or if you have any questions, you can give a call to me on the Huff line. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom is Huff. And the phone number is 831-423-HUFF, 4833. Linda, as I told you on the email, if you want to call back next week or an update and further report, we never really got into the details of your actual court fight. We can talk more about that. I'll have a number of suggestions for you if you want to stay in touch by email. And, of course, if you ever make it over the hill, Huff meets every Wednesday, 9:30 in the morning in the basement of the Santa Cruz County building at 701 Ocean Street in the cafeteria. And the Human Rights Organization, a kind of a sister organization, meets every Saturday, 10 o'clock, in the next few meetings anyway, in Loudon Nelson or Laurel Park, which is on Laurel and Center Streets, more or less. It's actually one street over, but it's not hard to find. So consider coming over. If you can't come over, keep in touch by email and keep us advised. People want more info. Again, Google for Linda Jolly, J-O-L-L-E-Y, to read about her fight with the Redwood City police and court system, simply to be able to use her own vehicle, given the problem she has as an insomniac landscaper. Wow. and a defender of the rights of poor people. Thanks for calling, Linda. I'll give you the last minute to sum up if you'd like.
Okay. I'm very grateful because, like I said, we're facing something that may involve millions of different desperate people. I do have a possible route toward a solution. And the next time I call you, I'd like to describe the possible route. So people should look forward to that. And you're doing wonderful stuff. We live in a parallel universe. And this kind of stuff is probably happening all over the country, and everybody should take notice of it. So I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks a million, Robert.
Thank you, Linda. And we'll be hoping to hear from you again either next week or on Sunday.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
And in about 7 minutes, we're going to get a call in, we hope, from Nuff Said Nancy McCready and Beaming Bob Hansen in Santa Barbara, who also live in their vehicles down there, although they're actually... Nancy's kind of part of the establishment down there. She actually has been funded by different agencies to represent homeless people in different ways. And Beaming Bob, her partner, has been a high-profile protester at different times in the city of Santa Barbara. We'll see if she's able to call in. She may or may not remember. I suspect she probably will. If anybody else wants to call in, the phone number is 3772. And while we're waiting for all these calls, here's a little something to tide us over. That was another number from the infamous Houseless USA Volume 1, Skidmark Bob's contribution to homeless music. I have a call I received earlier today about new developments in front of New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue. I'm going to play it now. I'm going to try to play it now. I think we may have some problems. Let's see what actually...
Hold on a second. With something that you need to know, I'm going to hand my phone over to Lou, and he can better explain what happened last night in front of New Leaf. Okay, hold on.
That's Robert Morris. He's the police radio host. Tell him what happened. Just tell him what you were explaining to her.
About the child?
About what they're doing with New Leaf. The chain. They're trying to chain us out. Okay, they're trying to chain us out of New Leaf because we go down there and hang out and, you know, do whatever we have to do, just have a place to sit and socialize. Well, now they're blocking the little side things, which is, I know you know what that is, and what's going to end up happening is people are already mad. I mean, you can jump over that stuff. That's no problem. But they don't want us homeless hanging out there and messing up their pretty place. So what you can do tonight is you can call me when you're on the air if you'd like, because I'll be downtown probably in that general area, and I can get you some opinions on the air, okay? So call me back and let me know what you want to do. Thanks. Bye.
And unfortunately, my schedule is so tight, I can't call. But hopefully there'll be a little time toward the end of the show or possibly on Sunday when I do the show in the morning from 9:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We can talk about this further. What Linda, and that's another Linda, downtown, was talking about was that the area in front of New Leaf Market between the two kiosks, Cafe Campesino and Alfresco's, has been sort of the site of a lot of folks hanging out, many of them coming from the Rainbow Gathering, going through town with their backpacks and sometimes with their pooches and so forth, which has alarmed some of the merchants, and particularly inside New Leaf, who are concerned, about people smoking out there, or they're concerned about people looking unsightly or taking over the seating area and making it unavailable for paying customers. I've always felt that that area in front of New Leaf should be public space. It was public space before it was unceremoniously seized by the Public Works Department and turned into a private cash cow for the businesses in the area. But I have to say that the businesses have been pretty fair and loose about allowing the rest of the community to use that public space, provided it doesn't impinge on their pocketbooks and their profits, which, you know, I'm ambivalent about, to say the least. But I want to acknowledge Marilyn of Alfresco's and David of Cafe Campesinos trying to, you know, be reasonable. New Leaf seems to be the hard ass here. So what's being said is, and I haven't checked it out, and I know that there has been increased police presence. The SAFE, Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression performers, who show up every Tuesday night, have been complaining about police showing up, although they've acknowledged that there is a somewhat rowdier and more numerous crew of people out there during the day and during the early evening and so forth. To me, it's a matter of the street scene. Unless you're talking about real criminal behavior, we're not talking about marijuana use or sales, which is not real criminal behavior. Sorry, folks. You know, we're talking about a city downtown in the middle of a bad economy, and where that's going to be a reality. People will use black market activities in order to make ends meet. And as far as I'm concerned, I think as far as a majority of the people in Santa Cruz are concerned, the drug war is not something that the police department is supposed to be addressing. They shouldn't be ticketing Craig Canada for medicinally using marijuana with a card legally when he did that a week ago right in the McPherson Center off to the side, even though it was in public. It's not illegal to use medical marijuana in public, provided you are 1,000 feet from a school, a recreational facility, and so forth, which is another ridiculous proviso. 1,000 feet is an awfully long distance. But considering you can use tobacco anywhere you want, except San Lorenzo Park, if you're homeless, of course, although I understand there has been a lot of hard-ass ticketing going on of people in San Lorenzo Park who aren't homeless for smoking, which, again, I think is equally absurd, unless you're talking about next to the children's playground or in areas where, you know, people want to have tobacco-free zones. The idea of the entire area being tobacco prohibited and people getting large fines, to me, is a kind of abuse, which attempts to second-guess the wishes of the people who are there and also exalts the rights and the powers of one group far above those of another in an inappropriate way. It also unfairly impacts poor and homeless people. So anyway, that's the update from New Leaf. Not sure if we're going to be getting a call from Nancy and Bob. I think they are a little loose leaf in their schedule, so we'll see if they call in. Hopefully they will. Let's hear some street interviews while we're waiting.
So it's July 10th, about 5:30 in front of the Coffee Roasting Company. We have Thursday evening. We're talking with
Demon.
And Demon, what's happening on the streets? Say camping tickets galore?
Yes, camping tickets galore again. We're being harassed again. Animal I know has got 3 camping tickets. The reason why he's in a motel with me and his cousin now, his girlfriend. And we also have disabled being harassed that are in wheelchairs. Dustin has got 3 camping tickets.
Where was he getting these tickets?
Behind the Co-America Bank and behind Trader Joe's where they were sleeping at. So, and I know, up on the levee. I know that the cops are now patrolling the levee on the SUVs. And I keep telling them after 10 o'clock they're not patrolling up there. I know that for a fact. Because that's where I've been staying at. But I know that they go in early, and I said, you guys got to go in late and be up early.
For those who want to do some camping without being harassed.
Yeah.
So you say you also noticed some things happening at the Homeless Service Center?
Oh, yeah. The loft is still not open, which was supposed to be open 2 weeks ago.
That's the area where people would be able to get shelter, and that has the church program closed down?
No, it has not. It is still going. I've talked to a bunch of the girls. people are still being harassed down there. I'm not even allowed down there on the lot, hardly, because my ex works down there. I'm trying to get to getting a restraining order. Still fighting City Hall to get it. Because he's one of the volunteers in the kitchen, so when he's there, I'm not allowed to be there. And that's from Officer Young and Officer Peabody and Officer Sims, because he keeps stalking me.
Anything you've observed downtown that you want to note?
Oh, yeah. Where is it safe for us kids to hang out at anymore? After dark, without being harassed by Santa Cruz PD.
So what's happened in the last week that constitutes harassment?
Being followed by the police. And it's none of us guys that even have warrants, are drinking, or violate the law.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Damone.
And you're welcome, Robert.
All right. We have another woman standing nearby here. What is your name, madam?
Linda Abel.
Linda, you have a report as you fan yourself?
Oh, yeah. It's getting really bad down here.
And how so?
Well, people are just trying to enjoy themselves, and here come the police for no reason at all.
None. When's the last time you saw this happen?
A couple of weeks ago. A friend of mine was just kind of minding his own business, and they know him because he's out on parole, so of course they know him, and they harass him every chance they get, because they're trying to catch him so he'll go back to prison.
So and what exactly did they do that constituted harassment? Did you witness this?
Oh, yeah. Or? I was sitting right next to him.
Where was this?
Right in front of New Leaf.
Yeah, about what time of day or night?
It was night. It was dark, so it had to be about between 9:30 and maybe 10.
And what happened?
Well, we were just kind of sitting there, you know. We weren't really doing anything, and just sitting there, and the cop just kind of spots him and just came over, and I'm trying to remember exactly what he said to him, because I was like really tired. I mean, everybody scatters. When the cops show up, everybody scatters except me and his other friend. The only two of us that stayed there. Everybody else splits. I don't understand that.
How many police showed up?
Just the one.
Who was the officer?
I've seen him before. I just can't remember his name. He didn't give him a ticket or anything, I don't think. Or maybe he did.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure at this point.
And that was a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago.
So you haven't seen anything since?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Hey. We're talking with
Barbara Baker.
And Barbara, you have a new $3 bike you got from the bike shirt.
And Woman's Crisis, as my very expensive bicycle I worked for weeks for, it got stolen. And I'm very grateful that people are helping people, because when it comes down to it, it always is the people that make a difference. It isn't the money. And at the point where people are turning inward and stealing from each other, that's almost genocide. And I think it's time that people start thinking about what it was like after the earthquake, because that was really when we got leveled. This is the money. People come first. Thanks for doing what you're doing, Robert. It's so important for people to be connected.
Thank you, Barbara.
You had a good day.
Outfitters. So I'm down here in front of Rosie McCann's. Do you have a report for me, sir?
Hey, take it easy. Yes, well, actually, my friend here wanted to tell you something.
Well, we did. We did. We explained how I lost my weight.
On there?
I lost 60 pounds just last week alone.
And how did you do that?
I did it by stalking a jogger. Or jockeying a stalker, as the case may be. So it's about 9:55, July 15th, the day after Bastille Day. I'm in front of the New Leaf Market on a somewhat overcast day talking with
R.D. Morgan.
And R.D., you say that you had a special citation tax, like under the bridge?
Yes, for drinking a beer as an adult under the bridge, playing music.
And when was this?
This was about 9 p.m. last evening.
And were you playing alone, or were you playing in company?
I was with a lady.
Was she also cited for drinking, or was she...
She was 6 years older than I, and 6 years more beautiful than I, so they escaped the thought that she put her pint of whiskey away rapidly and allowed me to get a ticket for consuming a 24-ounce bottle or a bottle of pint.
Now, who were the officers involved, you know?
I did not cite their names or the badge numbers. They were just there.
And how many were they?
Just two.
And was there any interesting, what kind of conversation happened between you and the police?
Yes, that I must disperse in the area and discontinue paying property taxes if I continue to think that I could camp anywhere I'd like to with my friends and fellow musicians, or incite the idea that music was the good.
So their concern was camping rather than drinking, or?
Music that they didn't like either.
Well, you have your guitar with you. Are you a bad musician?
Apparently not. I've been paid by most of the Edgewater, the Catalyst, some of the higher tone bars, the Acapulco, some of the higher tone bars down have paid my bands. But they just don't like me.
And we are talking with
R.D. Morgan.
R.D., thank you, and carry on. But remember, drink only when you are suitably housed. Otherwise, it's a bad thing.
Well, isn't it evident that if you drink alone, you're an alcoholic? A closet drinker is an alcoholic.
Go in the closet and drink is the motto.
I just won't allow that.
Thank you.
Freud and Young, and I won't do that. In child psychology, I have a master's, and these children are really out of line.
Well, there you have it. A slice of life on the streets here in beautiful downtown Santa Cruz. Thank you, R.D.
Robert.
You were talking with?
Bird.
And Bird, you're a Santa Barbara man from old Beaming Bob Hansen days.
Yes, you know it. Remember you helped me when we had the at McDonald's. Remember that?
That was 16 years ago.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
It was.
How you doing these days?
I'm good. I see you're here in town in front of the Chiantes. Are you traveling through? Or?
Yeah, I just came back from the Rainbow Gathering.
Oh, how did anybody get arrested back there?
Well, the LAO started a fire in the woods and tried to say we did it. They pepper sprayed Kitty Village. They just went out of control this year.
Huh.
But it was pretty good gathering anyway.
Wow. Well, welcome back. Are you going to be in town for a while?
Oh, I'm just passing through. I'm trying to get to Santa Barbara.
Yeah, actually, we'll be interviewing Nancy McCready and Bob on the radio in 2 days, on Thursday evening. So when we play this... Perhaps when we play this interview with you, we'll also be hearing from them.
Tell Bob and Nancy I say hi. I'll be home soon.
All right. So any problems in Santa Cruz so far?
Oh, no. Santa Cruz has been beautiful this time.
Again, we've been talking with?
Bird from Santa Barbara.
Thanks, Bird. And any recollection of what happened way back at McDonald's when?
I think we won. We won everything, and they let us have what we wanted. It was back when they wouldn't let us bring our bags around the store.
Right.
So we won that one.
I think there were a couple of other demands we had, but we got them. And, hey, I've forgotten that victory so many years ago.
You take care, brother.
Thanks.
And that actually was back in 1992. I went down to Santa Barbara. I was hired by the Legal Defense Center of Santa Barbara. It was then prosecuting the Seven City lawsuit, again, against the sleeping ban. And we did some organizing against businesses that discriminated against the homeless. McDonald's on State Street in Santa Barbara was one of them. They they altered their policies that homeless people were not allowed to bring their backpacks in and with them when they sat down. They suddenly started enforcing a time limit on people sitting that was rather brief, as I remember, and they also refused to sell a second cup of coffee, I think it was. I'm not quite sure about that last condition, but we demanded that they return to previous policies, and we started picketing the store, and the McDonald's management finally agreed to our terms. It was quite a victory. Of course, it involved a lot of people who did a kind of civil rights protest in front of the McDonald's on State Street way back in 1992. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris. This is the last half hour of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Looks like we're not hearing from Nuff Said Nancy and Beaming Bob, or Protest Bob, as he calls himself, today either. They're, who knows what they're doing. I was kind of looking over internet stuff, as I often do before the show. I want to direct people's attention to Indy Bay, Santa Cruz Indy Media, again, because I posted two stories there that folks might find of interest. One is about homeless courts, and that's another call-in we didn't get from Danny of the Coalition on Homelessness, or perhaps his name is Kevin, I'm not sure which. It was a last-minute attempt to get him to call in and talk about homeless courts and what the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, which employs a lot of homeless people, publishes a homeless newspaper called Street Sheet, and fights for the civil rights of homeless people, what they thought of the homeless courts, which are now operating in Santa Cruz. And I wrote a little story about the homeless court in Santa Cruz, though I have not been to a session. I just recently got a copy of the guidelines. It's for a thing called Project Clean Slate. And what I want to do is read something from the Coalition on Homelessness about San Francisco's, what they call, poverty courts. And here's what the story from last year's Street Sheet, which you can get online, that's interesting. I think the last 4 or 5 years of Street Sheet, which is published every month, are all online under Coalition on Homelessness. If you Google for Coalition on Homelessness Street Sheet, you'll be able to get these back issues. Erroneously named community courts, the poverty court being proposed by Mayor Newsom for the Tenderloin aims to limit the due process rights of homeless people. This court would focus on status crimes, i.e. those crimes that are unavoidable for people who are poor and living on the streets. Poverty courts represent a further step toward the permanent criminalization of poor and homeless people, disguised as a more compassionate approach to quality of life issues. However, since no amount of punishment will ever succeed in lifting people out of poverty, the court will only deepen the cycle of incarceration and homelessness. One, the overall concept in San Francisco. While the city has no plan for the court and is facing mounting opposition, the information we have gathered indicates that they would redline a portion of the poorest neighborhood in San Francisco, the Tenderloin, and any sleeping, sitting, vending, camping, graffiti, and prostitution tickets received in this area would be sent to a special court. The police would march the individual immediately to an overnight stay in jail and or to the court, and punishment would be swiftly doled out. In the mid-Manhattan model in New York City, which the Newsom administration has decided to recreate, punishment for sleeping is cleaning the sidewalk in front of the world's largest corporate headquarters. Poverty courts further criminalize poverty. While alternative sentencing might be a positive solution for minor misdemeanors, they actually increase the punishment for low-level crimes that are currently defined as mere infractions. This proposed court would target so-called quality-of-life crimes, such as sleeping in public spaces. The court would criminalize basic life-sustaining activities that are unavoidable and are disproportionately and selectively enforced against poor and homeless people. The poverty court would further embed local homelessness policy in the criminal justice system. The police, arbitrators, and community service punishments cannot solve homelessness. This can only perpetuate the cycle of homelessness. The perception that services are attached at the end of the criminal justice system may serve as encouragement to law enforcement agents to issue even more citations, even when a person is not in violation of the law. And also, of course, it's a fantasy that such services actually exist for the majority of people in the system. Attaching social services to the criminal system is poor policy. Despite the housing initiatives of the current local administration, we still lack sufficient housing in San Francisco. This is the story there. Jobs or health care to provide an exit from homelessness. Placing people who have been sentenced by the court into treatment may not be feasible. There are currently hundreds of people on the wait lists for residential treatment, as well as methadone maintenance among individuals voluntarily seeking treatment. Mandatory services through the court system place those who are sentenced by the court ahead of those who may have been on the waiting list for months or years at a time. Prioritizing those in the criminal justice system creates a strange triage process where people are prioritized based on having interacted with the police as opposed to having a dire need of the service. The type and duration of services typically offered, such as counseling, AA meetings, and English Second Language classes, are not effective. Stabilization beds, shelter beds, and other brief services do not address the root causes of homelessness. The administration's track record with Proposition M against aggressive panhandling was quite poor. The mayor promised voters that panhandlers would get, quote, treatment. They did not. Apparently, there is no treatment for panhandling. Like Proposition M, there is no funding for services attached to this initiative. Creating new services specifically for this poverty court would be ill-advised and would produce backward public policy, whereby police officers would act as triage nurses, deciding who got access to scarce services by giving people tickets. Due process. If this poverty court is modeled after the Mid-Manhattan Court and similar ones around the country, it would deprive homeless and poor individuals of their due process of law and raise concerns over involuntary servitude. People of very low incomes do not receive adequate representation within the courts now. This poverty court would exacerbate this problem by affording poor people less, not more, access to due process rights. Victimized, abused, and discriminated against by society at large, the homeless community needs more, not fewer, procedural safeguards when accused and subjected to criminal sanctions. The due process concerns are specific, numerous, and compounded when considering the rights of poor and homeless individuals. The 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, fundamental and unique to the U.S. justice criminal system, is the guarantee of basic due process rights. Essential to this is the hallmark that a criminal defendant is innocent until proven guilty. The majority of working models of the poverty courts, however, demand the guilt of the individual be admitted before them. The Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, the poverty court's assumption or demand of a guilty disposition, violates the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution's guarantee of freedom from self-incrimination. You have to say, I am guilty, I admit it. In light of dramatic underrepresentation of the homeless community, any supposed voluntary participation in the system and requisite self-incriminating statements should be heavily scrutinized. The Sixth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, the models available now stand in violation of the Sixth Amendment, which is the right to counsel, the right to have a lawyer, and to have a trial by jury. No poverty court model offers this most basic of guarantees, the right to a lawyer. As applied to homeless individuals, the poverty court proposals themselves threatens to take us back to a time before Mississippi v. Brown, which is a court case, when vicious discrimination in the criminal justice system routinely deprived African Americans of their right to have a lawyer in their defense. Although it also has to be said that in infractions, which are what most of these violations are, sleeping on the streets, urinating, trying to light a fire to stay warm, trespass if you're sleeping on private property, are infractions, mostly. The trespass can be a misdemeanor, but the rest are infractions where you don't get an attorney anyway. No remedy for constitutional violations. Traditional courts exclude evidence obtained in violation of the U.S. Constitution. but the poverty courts offer no remedy and offer nothing to deter illegal searches of homeless persons. The entire proposal completely ignores the overwhelming problem of government misconduct and intrusion into the privacy of homeless individuals and the obvious tragedy of malicious prosecution of homeless community, of the homeless community. No formal rules of evidence. Traditional courts use formal rules to prohibit unreliable, irrelevant, and prejudicial evidence. Poverty courts do not restrict the use of this evidence. Subject to grave public animus and frequent police misconduct, the homeless community must be protected from unfair prejudice. The Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which is the prohibition to cruel and unusual punishment, which actually overturned the Los Angeles sleeping ban, and also the San Diego sleeping ban in a settlement, and arguably caused the Richmond City Council to put into its new law of a year ago that there can be no, actually it was 2 years ago, that you can't arrest someone for sleeping unless you have a shelter place for them, is this ban on cruel and unusual punishment, the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I think it's the 17th Amendment to the California State Constitution as well. The entire process of inundating the homeless community with quality of life infractions. You get a ticket for sitting near a building. You get a ticket for sitting within 50 feet of an ATM. You get a ticket for lying down on the sidewalk. You get a ticket for having a dog on Pacific Avenue. The entire process of inundating the homeless community with quality of life infractions for conduct that they must engage in because of their homelessness violates the Eighth Amendment prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment. As determined by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, it is cruel and unusual punishment, that's the Jones decision, to penalize persons for acts in which they must engage. Full disclosure, the Jones decision has been depublished, or I should say, it has been vacated. I think it's still available to cite, but it no longer has as binding force in the nine-state area of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. However, the reasoning is still there, and indeed, Sacramento homeless advocates are pursuing a lawsuit against the city authorities and the police, are intending, I believe, to use the argument in the Jones case that it's cruel and unusual punishment to give homeless people tickets for sleeping when you're not going to be, when you know there's no legal place for them to go. It's something they have to do. It's a status, not a crime. It's a condition. And therefore, you are punishing them for something that is involuntary. Hence, it is cruel and unusual punishment. Community service sentences for homeless persons denied due process raise concerns over involuntary servitude. That's like slavery, as we heard Linda from Redwood City talking about earlier. And threaten organized labor. The Coalition on Homelessness welcomes service as an alternative to incarceration. However, regularly sentencing a homeless person through a system in which they are routinely denied due process, subjected to unfounded accusations, and penalized for their housing status is inhumane. Community service sentencing that displaces once paid and unionized workers is also a threat to the rights of labor. Poor use of public funds. This is an article again about the downside of the poverty courts or the homeless courts or the court that is held now every Tuesday at the Homeless Service Center, and it's called Project Clean Slate. You see, it's going to give you a clean slate. Poor use of public funds. This court has a preliminary price tag of $1.3 million. I don't know how much the clean slate courts are costing. The most likely is for acquisition of a building alone and does not include innumerable court, attorney, clerical, or other service costs. We believe that cities and counties should cease funding the criminalization of poor and homeless individuals and instead use public funds to address the root causes of poverty and homelessness. Root causes include the lack of affordable housing and the limited scale of housing assistance programs, as well as people's inability to pay for housing, food, child care, health care, and education. Summary. Millions of homeless people across the country live in peril of detention, abuse or incarceration by law enforcement officers, not to mention the seizure of their vehicles or their homes on wheels, for no reason other than that they have no home. Poverty courts further embed local homeless policy in the criminal justice system and hold no promise of adequate housing or services required to exit homelessness. The criminalization of poor and homeless individuals does not address root causes of poverty and homelessness, although it does sort of please the angry prejudice and bigotry for the moment of merchants or residents that somehow just don't want this problem in their neighborhood. Only if you just, in more police were out there, it would be solved. That's the mindless cry. The call for a community court in the Tenderloin to expedite criminal prosecution of homeless people in San Francisco is simply another election year ploy. The mayor of San Francisco has high hopes hung upon the poverty court proposal as a solution to the problem of inner city neighborhoods. These hopes are unrealistic. The proposed poverty court would simply waste public funds and pose a greater threat to the rights of the homeless community, a group that already faces extreme discrimination in society and in the criminal justice system. This poverty court would further criminalize the homeless community, violate the due process rights of our homeless population, and would systematize involuntary servitude, slavery. Accordingly, the Coalition on Homelessness registers our opposition to the proposed community court. And that is from the street sheet in San Francisco back in, I think it's in October of 2007. You can find it online under street sheet. And I've actually posted a link to it on indiebay.org in case you want to check it out. Donna Dice, who will be going to court on July 30th in an attempt to eliminate the resisting arrest charge that Sergeant Lamas has stamped upon her, got a copy of her police report and brought it to the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, meeting yesterday. And while I haven't posted that report online yet, I want to get Donna's okay before doing that, I did read through its 50 pages, or many of the pages, and did make some comments about the many, many pages of police reporting around what? Essentially justifying Sergeant Lamas's breaking Donna Dice's arm. Because that sort of gives a black eye to the police department, don't you know? All, of course, to stop people from smoking marijuana, some of whom have reportedly medical marijuana cards, others of whom are simply smoking it recreationally, but so fucking what? You know, unless your objective is to drive people in their vehicles out of town, it's okay when surfers drink beer, but, you know, it's not okay when hippies smoke marijuana. I mean, this is how that we dealt with this one 40 years ago. Apparently not. So anyway, go online if you're interested to check my latest comments on the Donna Dice issue. There's a long, hostile thread or two on the Sentinel, which you can find by going to the stories on the Santa Cruz Indie Bay if you want to read a lot of people screaming about how there are contradictions between the witnesses in the Donna Dice case. I invite any of these critics to come on the air and address and express their concerns. They've been invited to do so before, but they prefer to rant and rave on the Sentinel forums and occasionally on the Santa Cruz Indie Media site, and not to actually talk on the air about this issue, which is unfortunate because you might get a real dialogue here. I try to be fair to people who call up. I disagree with some people and some callers very strongly, but I also try to be fair. So, all you folks out there who think the police department is doing a fine job and did a fine job on Donna Dice's arm, or perhaps feel that even though that might have been a mistake, why are we raising the roof with all this hullabaloo? Why don't we just wait for the courts to do their thing and let everything calm down and trust our local police department? I'll call in and let's talk about it, and I'll tell you why that is a very, very bad idea. 427-3772 is the call-in number, and you are invited to call in. So, what else have we here in the last 10 minutes? I've also been in touch with the Santa Barbara Police Department. I'm trying to get some information about why they have a Measure P, like our Measure K, that requires the police to provide information and requires them to write regular reports on marijuana busts, like the bust that busted Donna Dice's arm. The police reports claim in great detail this was a marijuana bust, even though Donna Dice was not charged with possession, cultivation, use, sales, etc. of marijuana until 4 days later, and then that charge disappeared in court, never showed up there. The charge appeared after we raised a major stink about the police breaking a 61-year-old woman's arm, or if she's 60, 61. And the police covered their butts with a public with a very rare and unusual public press release. And the reason I say it's unusual is because that's what I got from a Sentinel reporter who was covering this whole thing, although she apparently didn't have the guts or the balls or the ovaries, if you will, to actually put a story in the Sentinel about it. Instead, Sentinel trolls get to vamp and claw all over Donna Dice instead of suggesting the police department needs to be looked into here, that it's not okay for a young, vigorous, healthy officer to be breaking the arm of an elderly, disabled woman, even if she were smoking a joint, even if she were ignoring his authority, which she was ignoring his authority, but she says she didn't know that he was a police officer. But even if she did, there's been no evidence presented that she was actually in possession of the illegal marijuana, as though that would make any of this right anyway. Anyway, Measure P in Santa Barbara actually established a committee which meets four times a year under the Rotkin-Coonerty situation. I should say the Coonerty-Matthews City Council. Our Measure K Commission can only meet twice a year and, of course, is not allowed to look over the police reports or require the police to explain themselves. They can just do whatever they want. And apparently they do. Hence, we have broken arms and hopefully big lawsuits against the city. If that's what it takes to bring this city into compliance, then we need it, and soon. There's a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, which I will talk about on Sunday. I don't know if it's really got a lot of exciting material that is worth getting into at any great depth. But I'll probably look it over. I found it interesting, the corruption in the San Jose Police Department has been notorious for years. And the Mercury News, the San Jose Mercury News, to its credit, in spite of increasing corporate control of that paper and in spite of its sellout of Gary Webb and his investigation of the CIA cocaine racket and the drug war bullshit there, the San Jose Mercury News has been recently, anyway, focusing on the police department cover-up of a woman who plowed down two bicyclists and then wasn't even given a drunk driving test because she's a former police officer, and the cops covered it up. And it's quite a scandal. And I may be talking about that as well. I think what I'm going to do is go into a few more street interviews and welcome Uncle Dennis, who should be coming on in about 9 minutes. There may be an update from the folks up at the strike on campus, UCSC strike, the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. And perhaps you'll hear some more about that. And I will sniff around to see if there's anything else, but I think I may have shot my bolt for this two-hour session of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. If you have stuff you want to bring to my attention or you have comments you want to make off-air, you can do so at 423-4833, the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I remind you again, HRO, the Human Rights Organization, meets Saturdays, 10 o'clock, in Laurel Park. And look for a small gathering of elderly guys with the occasional younger person in tow. Just shout Human Rights Organization anywhere and you'll find us. or those of us who show up. This show is archived at www.huffsantacruz.org. Usually takes about a day for that to happen, but it will happen. We're updating our website again. Hats off to Tenderfoot Tim Rinker. He's got a front page story on IndieBay about the destruction of the health services with the new budget cuts, and it's no joke. He's asked me to ask people in my interviews how they're doing for health care in terms of whether they are now able to still get the medications they got before, and I'm going to try to add that to my repertoire of questions. Here's some more interviews.
So I'm here in front of New Leaf Market. It's about 10 after 3 on the 15th of July, and I'm talking with...
Mariana.
And Mariana, you are a Norwegian national.
Yes.
You're passing through.
Yeah.
And have you been traveling by boat, car, plane, foot?
I think I'll have to rent a car because it's not too easy to get around without.
Have you been hitchhiking? Or?
No, I'm not that brave.
Well, how did you, have you hitchhiked in Europe much?
Yeah, I did hitchhiking in Europe, and also I've been driving around in Europe, but here, not. I came by plane, and then I took the train here and bus.
Where did you come, what was your point of origin on the plane?
What was the...
Where did you land?
San Francisco.
So you came down here?
Yeah.
And why did you come down here?
To surf.
To where?
To surf.
To surf?
Yeah.
You're a surfer chick.
Well...
Where's your surfboard?
Well, the waves are pretty low.
Too low, huh?
Yeah.
And so you're in Norway, is there a surfing scene?
Well, I will discover it when I come back because I came here to learn surfing and surf, so I've been...
Did you fall in love with a surfer in Norway? Tell me the truth.
No.
How did you get in... Well, I imagine it's a little frigid to do the surfing, right? Wow, shows how much I know about the currents. And so your first time in the U.S.?
Looks like this tape is fading out. Could be because we're losing battery power. Luckily, it's still possible to switch to another machine to see if we can save the remnants of the Norwegian surfer story. I'm not too sure what... It has a lot of relevance. Actually, I think some other items came up in the course of this interview. Let's see what we got.
Before, with my mother, like 10 years ago.
And your mom is a rich heiress.
She's a what?
A rich heiress. She's a wealthy woman who got her money in, I don't know, plastics.
My mother is a judge. I don't know if she's a wealthy
a Norwegian judge.
Yeah.
And as a judge in Norway, does she make a lot of money?
Well, not too much.
And you, are you a working person?
Now I work as a teacher, yeah.
What do you teach?
I'm actually going to teach English. Sure. So that's part of why I'm here.
Well, you sound like you know English.
Not too good.
Yeah, you speak it. You certainly speak it better than I speak Norwegian, there's no question about it.
Well, yeah, we are only 4 million people that speak Norwegian, so...
Yeah.
It might be not be so interesting.
You have good taste in sunglasses.
You think so?
Cool. Show me what's beneath the glasses. Show me those eyes. Okay. You got some green eyes under the sunglasses.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, first time in Santa Cruz.
Well, yeah, first time here.
And you say you've noticed, for example, we have an officer here who's kind of keeping an eye on the scene because there's a lot of small violations that are happening. So, for instance, if I were to sit down right there on that area, that could be construed as technically illegal. Or, for example, if I were to go over here and actually I can kneel, but if I sit, this is a criminal offense.
Is that right?
That is correct. You're not allowed, and you can't sit within 14 feet of a building.
But you know what? I'm really surprised about this. things here because I couldn't get into, I couldn't buy beer, and I couldn't get into this catalyst without my passport, and I didn't bring my passport out, so I have an ID, but I didn't believe the ID and everything, so I couldn't get into the place.
What kind of an ID do you have?
Like, you have like a bank card, all the credit cards and all, I have a photo on it, and it says the birthday and everything, but I couldn't figure it out, like, and my credit card is that I can travel whole, you know, Europe without my passport, or not Europe, but I can travel Scandinavia without my passport, and just with this card, and I cannot get into the catalyst.
Have you tried other bars? Have you tried the Dakota? I don't know if Dakota is still open, or let's say the Blue Lagoon. Have you tried other bars too? Have you tried to purchase alcohol?
I tried to buy alcohol just from, you know, a small shop.
And how did that go?
Well, they don't believe that I'm past 21. That's really surprising to me. I'm 34.
You're a very youthful 34, girl. And I was afraid I might be hitting on someone who was far too tender here.
Well, no.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you look very young. You probably know that, right?
Yeah, but not 21, you know.
Well, it's interesting. There's a very kind of prohibitionist mentality. I mean, Norway, I imagine, has laws against smoking marijuana.
Well, yeah, there's a law. Pretty strict. You go to prison if you have, like, one piece of gram or something.
Well, here in Santa Cruz, or in the United States, actually, in California, the penalty for marijuana under an ounce is a fine of $100. So it's not a big deal. But there is a lot of undue police attention to the, you know, cultivation, smoking, transportation, possession, sale, and purchase of marijuana.
Yeah. Hmm.
And so it's a kind of a prohibitionist country. It's like a country that, you know, a lot of the drug war is in full swing here in this country. Just like you have a war against, well, they call it a war against terror, but you actually have a bunch of terrorists occupying Iraq in military uniforms which say U.S. government on them, if you follow what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have the terrorists defining terrorism, and they call it the war on terrorism. It's actually the war by the terrorists against the peoples of Iraq, Iran, poor people in this country, and so forth.
Uh-huh.
That's my view, anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know what Norway's doing about it. I hope you haven't got anybody occupying Iraq.
Well, we are in NATO.
Yeah.
So we are there, you know.
Or they're in Afghanistan.
No, in Afghanistan, right.
So what you see here is there's also been a large rainbow gathering, which is a community of kind of people with a hippie lifestyle, sort of a communal lifestyle. They gather once a year. They did it this year in Oregon.
Yeah.
And they're coming through town now. A lot of people are sort of migrating to back to where they were or to other places.
Actually, it was Wyoming, not Oregon. So I think that's enough of that chit-chat. That was interesting. This conversation with the Norwegian visitor happened right next to a sergeant who was surveilling the scene at New Leaf. And it has been mentioned earlier that New Leaf is kind of become a focal point for more social engineering, more police coming down to move people along under non-existent loitering laws. I saw this happen night before last when police told people inappropriately they had to leave the seats, even after the whole area had essentially been closed in terms of the businesses, with the exception of New Leaf Market, and there was no objection from either Alfresco's or Cafe Campesino. If the police begin to vigorously enforce the seizure of the public spaces again under New Leaf direction, I may show up again and start tabling there to protest the reduction of public spaces. I can understand New Leaf wanting to have access to tables that they lease, and that's fine. But to, for example, chain off the area after hours, as one caller you heard earlier say is happening, is something that's a matter of some significant concern to me. Anyway, that's it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Uncle Dennis should hopefully be showing up soon. And let's hear a little adios music from 15, a song called Land.
the question. Who wants a plan? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. A president raises the question. Who wants a plan? Who owns the plan? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? To all imperialism? Who owns the land? Will someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land?
That's pretty much it for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides for tonight. Robert finishing up a few little electronic details in the corner there. Uncle Dennis here in the slightly warm chair. Robert, of course, back on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning if he can stand to be up at that hour. Myself, I won't be, but, you never know. More issues of the homeless and dispossessed. Right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also at www.freakradio.org if you're online. Make a donation, support the station, keep us from working too hard. That's your joy. Anyway, I'm here until 11 o'clock tonight playing music from the 60s and the 70s, rock and roll, blues, psychedelia, British Invasion, the whole schmear, not folk and not folk rock, not country or anything like that, just rock and roll. Let's start off with the Rolling Stones.